Hi, everyone. You're listening to Let's Talk About It Wellness Radio, brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. This is your weekly wellness radio station, and we're so glad you've hopped aboard today. We've got another one of those really, really important topics that you may find value in. And in that case, we really super encourage you to hear the show. But you may also be able to identify somebody in your community, friend, family member, neighbor, somebody you go to church with, somebody you work with, that could benefit from the show, that may not have heard the show. And that's where your role in community radio really comes in. Because as you're listening to the show today, what we want you to do is we want you to think about those people that you know, that you care about, that you love, who may be impacted by this very thing that we're going to talk about today, our topic. If that is the case, you can go to the website. You can go to kxlradio.com, click on the Let's Talk About It link, and you'll find this show, and you'll find a lot of other shows in podcast form. But what we want you to do is find this podcast and then share it with that person that you cared enough to think about today, because there are people out here that we're going to talk about that are suffering, that need support, that need resources. That is why we do the show. We can't get the show in everybody's ear. But you can do that for us by selectively sending it through the podcast at kxlradio.com to anyone who may be concerned or want to know more about this topic. That's why we're doing this. We are joined today by an old friend of mine. We were catching up just before we started the show. Her name is Helen Palomino, and she is a licensed clinical social worker, which is actually kind of where I met her, because we were together thrown into a grant-funded project called Safe Futures up in the Brawley area for Brawley Union High School. A version of that is actually still going on. There's the Brawley Union High School Family Resource Center is kind of the remnant of Safe Futures. And so we're both Safe Futures veterans, so we're kind of catching up and talking. Helen is now the CEO of the Cancer Resource Center of the Desert. Now, if she's cancer and I'm mental health, then you probably are going putting together the math in your head and say, oh, I know what this show's about. And yeah, it's an important show. So we're going to talk about that. Welcome aboard, Helen. How are you?
Hello. Thank you so much for inviting me to share information about this very important subject about cancer for the community of Imperial County. And it's a pleasure to be here.
You know, when we were talking before we started, you said you'd finally found what you, the job you'd always wanted to grow up to be, right? And so you are in your dream job. Yeah. And it's the CEO of a cancer resource center. Cancer to a lot of us is a pretty scary thing. You know, it just kind of lurks out there. And so how do you find passion and embrace in something that's scary for so many people?
Cancer is very unpredictable. You're right. It's terrifying for many people, and it cuts across anything. It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter how much money you make. Cancer can show up and impact the individual and any family member. I, too, have been impacted by it with my family. And I understand the loss. I understand survivorship. And for myself, that is what I've learned to work with. But that's not why I got into this work. I got into this work during my schooling, when I was attending San Diego State in San Diego for my Master's of Social Work, and I was attending UCSD's for my internship. I was assigned to UCSD Thornton Hospital, and next to Thornton Hospital at that time in La Jolla is Moores Cancer Center, and that's where I was introduced to the whole subject of cancer. And I commuted for 3 years and loved the subject matter I was learning and fell in love with this subject and the people that were affected by cancer. And I thought I was sacrificing commuting from Brawley all the way to San Diego for school and internship. But then as I did my internship at UCSD, I met so many people from Imperial County and the sacrifice they were making to try to live with this terrible disease. And that's when I was clear, this is the work I need to do. And at that time, I knew Diana Peacher, who was the founder of the Cancer Resource Center of the Desert. She was helping me with some Imperial County patients. And so I met with her, and I promised her, as soon as I'm done with school, I am going to come and volunteer with you. And in May of 2008, I finished school, and I went and started volunteering with the Cancer Resource Center of the Desert. In January of 2009, I was hired as their medical social worker, and I've been there ever since. And I absolutely love this community. I love the people we help, and I really appreciate all the different providers in our community that do so much beautiful work to support the people that live here. And so it's been a wonderful experience for me. This is, it is a lot of suffering and a lot of resiliency. I have deep admiration for the resiliency that people exhibit and experience during this very difficult time of their life.
Is Imperial County, you know, we know about our demographics. We know about the particulate matter in our air for the asthma people. We know about our history, our proud history of being, you know, the food basket for so many parts of the United States, and the amount of labor and exposure sometimes to chemicals and stuff that was born of necessity. Are we a cancer hotspot? Does living in Imperial County increase our risk of lifetime cancer?
It could, but our population is very small. So statistically speaking, we don't have more cancer than, say, in other parts of California. However, statistically, significantly, there are some areas that have been studied, like in the Calexico area, the Ocotillo area, as well as in the north end with Brawley, Westmoreland, and up into Calipat. Those two areas have shown a statistically significantly higher level of late-stage breast cancer diagnosis. So it's not so much that statistically we have more cancer, but maybe what one of the oncologists locally said was, if you put together all the blood cancers, then you would have a higher rate compared to the rest of the state. But our population is small. So, but we are all at risk. Environmentally, health-wise, genetically, there's all kinds of risks that may contribute to someone having cancer. But it's the causality has not been so clear.
Right.
That's the difference. But something worth considering for health and wellness and our wellness checkups, the key is early detection.
Yeah, that's really not only the key to catching stuff early, but it's also probably the key to allaying a lot of fears, because walking around being scared of something all day with this whole kind of boogeyman kind of feel to it, it isn't good for our mental health, but it may not be good for our overall health as well, to be kind of just unaware, uninformed, and worried at the same time. That's kind of a bad combination.
Yes, and it contributes to our experience of living. And when someone is diagnosed locally, a lot of our diagnoses it's very common to be diagnosed later stage. When it comes to cancer, they can there's a range of staging, and
right.
Earlier stage has a much more propensity for cure and remission on the earlier stages, 0, 1, and 2. The later stages, 3 and 4, which include metastatic disease, with 3 and 4, 4 being a terminal status, it's very common for people to be diagnosed at 3 and 4. So, and that is, a lot of times they may be experiencing symptoms, but they don't know what those symptoms are. They're tolerated, you know, they're just kind of ignored or set aside, and they're not going in for a checkup to find out what's happening. And culturally, that's a real challenge. We have such a strong work ethic in our community, and people don't want to miss work. And out of necessity, sometimes if they don't work, they don't get paid. Or if they don't work, they lose their seniority. And so there's a lot of reasons why people may not go to the doctor. And or they go to across the border for something immediate, thinking, you know, I'll just go get an antibiotic. I have a cold. I have a cough. I have a sore throat, and get that handled. And then they go back to work. So a lot of times people are not used to engaging their healthcare system here in the United States in this county, and to identify, you know, that there might be something wrong. And sometimes people are afraid. They don't want to find out that there's something wrong. And
so we're looking at logistical challenges. We're looking at cultural stuff. You know, you mentioned the cultural aspect of just working through the pain, because your job is that important and your role is that important. And we know that, you know, even with women, we hear that a lot, that they just kind of put it in their back pocket and say, well, okay, it hurts today, but I'm just going to keep going, and never follow up. There's probably even an economic component to this, because healthcare is not free, and it's not an entitlement yet to anybody. It's a privilege. You've got to be able to afford it, or you've got to have the time, as you were suggesting earlier, or it's got to be close enough to your house to get to. And all of these things weigh in on Imperial County in particular, in terms of challenges. The Cancer Center, you guys handled this aspect of the challenge, right? You're pushing prevention. What kind of stuff do you do to help people kind of change their mindset on keeping track of their bodies and keeping track of their health?
Well, our encouragement is if it's providing information, allowing people to understand that early detection is key for achieving some positive results if indeed someone is diagnosed. We have participated in different research studies. Our service is a social service. We are a social service agency. And our goal is to help people who are diagnosed with cancer access their the proper health care, engage and receive the proper insurance if they're uninsured, help them obtain insurance. If they are underinsured, to help them obtain optimal insurance. So we're trying to make sure that where they're at, they're able to take the next step forward. As far as prevention, our belief is early detection is key, and that comes down to accessing mammograms and pelvic exams for women, and wellness checkups for men, women, and children. It's important to be participating in that aspect. You made a great point about women who, you know, they put family first. They do everything possible. They're working. They're trying to achieve their own commitments and put themselves last many times. Or they are trying to get that mammogram and those appointments, and sometimes they make those appointments, and if they're working, they're making their arrangements to miss work that day so they can go get that medical appointment, and then to find out that that appointment was canceled. It sets them back, and it's the same thing with men. It's such a logistical issue, and there's so much room for things to not occur, and so it's about being informed and having the prioritization of their wellness. And so that would be on the prevention side. The majority of our work is intervention when someone is diagnosed. And what do they do? What happens is when someone is diagnosed, they are terrified. It's a mortality crisis. It's a crisis of, oh my gosh, am I going to die? That's the first thing that crosses people's minds.
Because in your heads, it's like a death sentence.
Exactly. Our goal is to identify as much as possible on the front end, whatever information they have, where they got this diagnosis. Sometimes it's in Mexico. Sometimes it's in the emergency room, or sometimes it's through their PC primary care doctor who refers them to get a biopsy with a local surgeon or something. And that's where that's discovered. And our goal is to provide them what is my favorite intervention, which is psychoeducation. What that means is helping someone understand what their diagnosis is and what it's not. Because people will think about things and be inside their mind and heart so scared and so worried. Our role as patient navigators, that's the name of our service, of our social workers. We're a team of social workers. We call ourselves patient navigators so we can help guide individuals through this challenging time. And it starts with educating them as to what is happening. We review their pathology report with them, explaining what it is, where things are going, what the oncologist is going to be looking for, and then what to expect, what type of studies and different types of diagnostic tests so that they can take these next steps. It's very challenging, especially if they're not used to going to the doctor. And if they have this diagnosis, it is a change in their life for many appointments. So our intention is, number one, finding out what is it that the individual understands? What is it that they think is happening? I need, and my team need to know, what, taking an inventory of what that individual knows and what they think is occurring. Secondly, what is it that they are wanting? What is their goal? Of course, they don't want the cancer. They want to live. But I can tell you, in many instances, people have said, if I have to stop working, I'm not going to treatment because who's going to support my family?
Right.
And so our goal is, let us help you make some better decisions. There are some ways to meet that need. If you are willing, we will help you. And it's really establishing trust. And our goal is to figure out what their needs are, listening to what they are wanting and needing, and see if we can't expand on that. Because our goal is to listen and support and help provide access to a specialist, to the, some people are not even set up with a primary care doctor.
Right.
We'll help establish that, or they're diagnosed in Mexico. And we help figure out a way to legally import their biopsy tissue, because in the United States, it has to be certified here. A pathology report, which is the study of what type of cancer cell,
right,
has to be here. And so we navigate all of that for them and help connect them with the right individuals. But it is a very confusing, overwhelming space. Our goal is to help calm and help them cope and make best decisions for themselves and their families. It's a ton.
Yeah. It sounds like to me that every single person in Imperial County who at some point in their life may be diagnosed with a cancer diagnosis, that you guys are must-stop people, that every single person who's been diagnosed with cancer should stop as soon as possible at the Cancer Resource Center. Does that happen? Do the providers push them your way?
Sometimes, a lot of times we get referrals straight from the Department of Social Services, people out in the community, word of mouth, other medical providers. We don't have a marketing budget. That's why we're appreciative of this opportunity and to get the word out. Our services are at no cost to the individual. And so last year we served 580 people to, and men, women, children, any cancer, any stage. And what we do is we quickly assess and find out what their needs are and quickly create a plan of action with them and with their permission and their support, because it's a team sport, this patient navigation, because our goal is to get them remove any barriers to their care for cancer. And that's what we're really great at. Some people have to go out of county for specialty care. We work with that. And we are looking at practical needs, transportation issues, nutritional issues. What is it that needs to occur for their support to continue forward?
Perfect. Hey, you know what? And we're joined today by Helen Palomino. She is the CEO of the Cancer Resource Center of the Desert, also a licensed clinical social worker. And this is Let's Talk About It, sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and talk more about this. This is, like I said, a really important topic, full of information in a lot of different directions. We're going to cover as much of it we can today. Again, this is Let's Talk About It. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to Let's Talk About It, Wellness Radio, brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. This week, every week, any week, it's your hour of respite. It's your hour of self-care. It's your hour just to sit back and learn about fascinating, supportive mental health stuff. Not only like worldwide stuff like climate change, we do those shows, but stuff, local stuff like the Cancer Resource Center of the Desert, where we're talking about local resources. Sometimes we talk about stuff that's deep inside of you. Like we had a show where we really were focusing on the internal process of a person being through their lifespan, being described in the life stages of a butterfly. And so we go all sorts of different directions. This is your wellness radio show. We bring you a wide variety of good wellness topics and encourage you to join us. So welcome back. Thank you for being here. We're joined by Helen Palomino. She is she's a licensed clinical social worker, first of all. Secondly, she's the CEO, the chief executive officer of the Cancer Resource Center of the Desert. Welcome back, Helen.
Thank you.
So Helen, let's kind of give us like we're going to do like a documentary, like a over the shoulder view here. You've got a family, and one of their family members, let's make it an adult, because children, it's going to be too traumatic. Let's just, That's a whole other layer of ouch. Has just been diagnosed with cancer. Their provider was one of your strong allies. So they said, hey, you guys, first of all, first and foremost, you need to get down to these guys and meet with them. They call up your office. I imagine they get an appointment time. They walk in the door. What does this look like?
So first of all, the commitment we have when we're engaging anyone is to really treat people with kindness and respect and dignity. We understand how traumatic this diagnosis is. So, for example, we recently helped someone who was a mom, and she was in her early 40s, and she has two children, and she has what's called advanced breast cancer. And she was being displaced. She didn't have any money. She couldn't work anymore, couldn't afford where she was living. So she was at risk of being homeless. So she has homelessness there. She's a mom, very little money, and dealing with this terrible disease.
A life-threatening diagnosis right on top of everything else.
On top of all of that. So what we did was, first of all, our goal is to help stabilize her circumstances. She did have medical insurance. She had Medi-Cal. We were able to help her apply for cash aid through the Department of Social Services, and we were able to get her an apartment. And because all of those things need to be stabilized if she's going to continue in her life-saving treatment. And so we were able to do that and support her with a lot of nutritional support as well, and help her obtain transportation support to her appointments through the Medi-Cal program, which Managed Medi-Cal provided. And as she's going through all of the challenges of her treatment, we are participating in a research study at El Centro Regional Medical Center's Oncology Center that looks at young breast cancer survivors, which is what she's eligible for, and helping the clinic staff address her women's health needs. And what that study does, it looks at fertility preservation if that's the need, birth control if that's the need, sexual health if that's the need, and hot flashes as a side effect of the treatment. In her case, she had two issues. She was experiencing a lot of hot flashes because her type of breast cancer has, it's called hormone positive, where the cancer cell has feeds off of estrogen and progesterone, female hormones. Not all breast cancers are the same. Hers was like that. One of the treatment processes is to give her medication that would turn off her ability for her body to produce estrogen.
Basically provoke menopause.
Exactly. And she was not ready for that. And so life is already very complicated and very difficult. And now she's dealing with side effects. That's just one side effect. You have all the other side effects of chemotherapy. And so she is experiencing many different symptoms, including one of the side effects for females is they will experience, and this is a reality, they will experience a vaginal dryness. It's extremely painful. And she did not know how to manage that. And she wasn't expressing it. Culturally, it's a taboo to speak of such things. Our goal with our study is to help our clinical team to ask those very private questions for her quality of life.
In ways that are sensitive enough that she feels safe and comfortable in answering, I'm getting.
Absolutely. And the team at the oncology center, they are very kind. So we are equipping them to raise their quality of care for these cancer patients. So she was referred to the study with those questions, and then that referral comes to our center where our patient navigators enroll her into this research study and really delve into her needs. And this study provides the opportunity for her to have access to a very powerful specialist. And this specialist is out of UCSD Moores Cancer Center, and that she's a specialist around oncology and fertility and women's health needs. So we created the opportunity through telehealth for this patient to access that physician who is going to assess her needs and help her access everything she needs for those side effects. The patient responds to the awareness and interest of the clinical staff as well as our team was so it was so appreciated because she had no idea what was available to her, and we provided her with education in Spanish, a simplistic, easy to understand tools that we utilized and developed and utilized for her to help improve how she manages all of her challenges. We provided her with samples of moisturizers for her, and she was so humbled and was not aware of her options. And that is a lot of suffering that many people go through because they're not aware what is available to them. And our goal is to kindly, humbly, disarmingly help them understand we are here to help. Help is available. There is no need to suffer in such ways. And that is the experience she's been able to go forward with. Not only did we help with housing, transportation, financial stability for her home life, we were able to help her in her individual challenges she was facing during her cancer treatment. And to me, that is, it's a service that is offered at no cost to her and in her language, very sensitively, very dignified. And it's so powerful that the appreciation and experience of living was improved. She will continue to be going through cancer treatment for a very long time. But yet she knows she's supported. She's supported not just by her oncology team, but by this team of social workers at the Cancer Resource Center of the Desert.
How was her mental health going through this? And is it predictable? Is it something that we've talked about, like the five stages of grief or whatever. So there are some models that look at how we handle crises as human beings. Do you see kind of waves of optimism, waves of pessimism, despair when we're talking about the holistic treatment like this woman was really dialed into? Is there a mental health component to that?
Absolutely. That is at the beginning, during, and ongoingly, and after those people that even achieve remission. It is something that we meet them right where they're at. So if they're newly diagnosed, our goal is to find out how they are feeling, what they're thinking about, how they're processing this. And in this woman's case, she's very resilient. She wants to live, but she had so much anxiety and she was what she did have was the ability to try to seek out help, but she could not quite articulate it. So our goal is to find out ways to help her cope better. And some of it could be CBT interventions where we're reframing and helping them think about those thoughts that are just very fearful thoughts and kind of help identify what that is and steer it towards another direction. Other interventions were pretty eclectic. We'll use breathing exercises, mindfulness techniques, finding things that make sense to the individual. In her case, she did have her side effects, but her feelings of overwhelm because she was put in this menopausal state she had some symptoms of depression, but it wasn't a depression diagnosis. It was something that was caused biologically. And so,
well, and I'm going to just say this. If you lay a cancer diagnosis on me this afternoon, I'm going to have some symptoms of depression just because, because it is natural.
Absolutely. And her children, her desire to live for
right.
Her, and the children understanding mom's going through a lot. And so even reaching out to those children and their school to see what resources are available to them. It's a very holistic approach, but our goal is to help them cope better, make better decisions, understand what their options are in a way that it makes sense to them in their language simplistically. As you know, in our community, we have a very low literacy rate here. And you're talking first, second grade, very common, and an even lower health literacy.
Right.
People don't understand their body. They don't understand their health. They don't understand the U.S. health system. They don't understand why things take so long. Oh, they want an answer right away, but there's so much complex steps that need to be taken to help answer that. And then they're fearful that it's not going to work. All this sacrifice of throwing up and meeting, going through treatment, and still we don't know what the answer is going to be because we won't know for a while. So it's helping people to take ease. As you said, when people are worried and scared and all of that cortisol and adrenaline in our system is not helping our system. So that's why to help them learn to calm and create ease and to put attention to the things that make them laugh, to find things that bring joy, those simple things that don't cost any money to help them access and do when they're feeling really anxious or overwhelmed, how to redirect their thinking and to really take inventory of the things that do work in their life. And that type of support is offered to them in many ways. And that's what's available to them in the variety of times that they encounter with us.
Nice. It sounds wonderful. You know, the one thing that really stands out to me is the complexity of onboarding children into this process. Some families are going to have different boundaries about what they tell their children. You know, some families, I could just see them saying, you know what, let's just leave the kids out of this. I'll do this privately. Sometimes the kids are going to be too young. Sometimes they're going to be older. There's going to be issues there. And some of the kids are going to catastrophize because this is potentially catastrophic.
Yeah.
All this has to be handled with sensitivity and you are part of the system then that ensures that steps like this are taking place and that people are considering cultural elements in family systems. I mean, you've got like a double multiplier there in terms of how to engage people in ways that they can hear, that's accepting to them, that's honoring of who they are.
Culture is the first filter for all the work we do, because if you don't take into account culture, that treatment plan may not work, that there may be issues with that culture, with how they handle their children and how they communicate with their children. You can't protect them. That they're going to see mom or dad losing their hair, changing, not having the energy, and all the changes that go with treatment. And so for us to help provide a way to communicate with the children so that it's not leaving it to the children to catastrophize, as you say, and suffer within themselves because parent loves them. They're protecting them. Our goal is let's do a great protection where you're involved and communicate, and we can help. We can make those communications with them. If you feel like you can't, we can help facilitate that. Or if the child is the one with cancer, it's the same thing. That's a whole nother dynamic because no children can be treated here in Imperial County. They have to be treated at a specialty hospital like Rady's.
Right.
And that displaces that child and parent that have to be out of county. And if there's other kids at home, someone else is caring for them, be it a spouse, grandparent, or friend. We need to know so that we can help facilitate how they're experiencing it, and supporting the parent that's with the child at Rady's.
Yeah.
There's a lot there. And our goal is to alleviate suffering, help them access resources in the optimal, timely way. We fill out all those applications that they need. We make sure they're connecting with the right resources. And if need be, we will make a referral out to behavioral health. We will make a referral out to Women Haven if they need additional intensive counseling. And but our role is so complex and so sensitive that that's what we try to alleviate their suffering.
This is Let's Talk About It. We're joined today by Helen Palomino. She is the CEO of the Cancer Resource Center of the Desert, and she's a licensed clinical social worker and longtime partner with behavioral health. So it's kind of nice to explore this angle of the partnership. Let's Talk About It. We'll be right back after the short break. We'll do one more segment. You're listening to Let's Talk About It. Yes, this is your voice for Radio Wellness, brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Join us this week. Join us every week. And if you can't join us, make sure and run over to kxoradio.com where you can find the Let's Talk About It link. Click on the link. You'll get this show. You'll get many other shows. You'll get Expressate, which is in Spanish. And so you'll get all this information that we do for our community as part of our wellness of our community in Spanish as well. And here's the bonus. If you hear things that you think apply to other people, please, please go take the time, go to the KXLradio.com website, go to the link and click on that link and share it with the people you care about. That is, we get over 2,000 downloads a month from that website, and they are almost all local IPs. So it's really, we're talking to our community here. And if there are people outside of our community, hey, guess what? It works for you too. Just kind of stay aware of that, because that's what community radio is. It's not just the one person who gets to hear the show today because they happen to be going to the grocery store on Sunday morning and they heard, you know, the rebroadcast popped up. It happens to me. I'm sure it happens to you. It's about people who are thinking about what can I do for my community? What can I do for my loved ones? What can I do for my family members? And that is the thing you can do. You can hear the show today and say, hey, you know what? I know somebody who's going through this stuff. I know somebody who my friend just was breaking down the other day telling me, that she thinks she may have cancer. Well, I've got a resource now. I can send her this radio show and say, hey, look, I love you. I'm thinking about you. I'm praying for you. And here's something you may want to listen to because this might help you out or help your family member out or whatever. And that's what community radio is all about. We are joined by Helen Palomino. She is a licensed clinical social worker. She is the chief executive officer of the Cancer Resource Center of the Desert. And, you know, one of the challenges in our mental health system, Helen, is when people walk in our door, or substance use in particular, we've got like a minute to get them to engage and buy in something that is going to be a lot of heavy lifting down the road. And the thing is it's going to be heavy lifting whether they engage or not. But we know that we can get better outcomes if we can get full engagement right away. I could just imagine for you, as a provider of somebody who's just gotten a cancer diagnosis, people are walking in and their heads are just swimming and they're completely overwhelmed by the existential problems, the like I was saying earlier, the financial, the logistic, the family members, everything. This is like trauma exposure, like 101, right? It is absolutely traumatic and can feel very life threatening to the people involved and their family members. You know, you've got an 8-year-old kid going, what am I going to do without a mom? You know, and this stuff gets super duper intense. What do you do to handle that moment? How do you get a person who is so overwhelmed and you know, I'm one of the natural resources, you know, I'm thinking, I just want to crawl under the covers. I just want to crawl under the covers and maybe not even set my alarm. And hopefully when I wake up, everything's going to be all better. How do you break through and engage and get people to fall in love with the possibility of full engagement and better outcomes?
It is quite a lot of finesse. There's much nuance to it. But it is a commitment of starting from a space of kindness. And when people sense your genuine authenticity, of interest to support, it is very disarming. My team is very good at that as well. So even when we answer the phone and someone is calling, either seeing if we can help or set up an appointment, my emphasis to my team is kindness and listening. And that is how we begin. Because once we can establish that we want to see how we can help, listening to what their needs are, the goal is hopefully we can establish that space of trust, that rapport, because in order for us to support and help, we need their permission. And that permission is in the form of release forms and authorizations so that we can identify what they are needing and wanting so that we can take those next steps. If they need a referral to a specialist, if they need a referral for pharmaceutical support, if they need a referral for insurance purposes or billing or any type of advocacy on their behalf, it comes with beginning with trust And a lot of times it's psychoeducation that brings down and alleviates that anxiety level. We don't pop out with release forms initially. We start to build relationship and understanding from the beginning. And we begin to listen to what they are wanting, what's happening. We're very good at assessing very quickly as we are with their permission, taking notations, moving, and really giving them the space of dignity. It's excellent customer service is the commitment, and they are in such a vulnerable space that our goal is to explain things to alleviate that anxiety and worry and overwhelm, and we just start taking it apart and helping them to see what is the next step needed. We advocate on their behalf. We write letters. We communicate. We set up appointments with them together, authorizations, and if they can't articulate, we are there to articulate on their behalf verbally and in writing. So the nice thing is we understand the speed that things need to occur because it's cancer. We have had the privilege of having excellent relationship with the Department of Social Services. We have been able to, with their support and cooperation of the patient and social services, been able to qualify people for Medi-Cal sometimes within 3 days, sometimes within a week, because of the expeditious need. And they are very clear at the Department of Social Services, when we are calling on behalf of a patient, this is not frivolous. This is a life and death circumstance. And we are very respectful and appreciative of the network of support that we have. And we make a difference for so many people in a very expeditious way. And that's what they experience, is that they begin to feel like, oh, thanks. I wasn't expecting this. I wasn't expecting the education. I wasn't expecting understanding. Oh, my gosh, you can speak with the doctors. You can try to schedule that. Yes, but we need your help. Together we work on helping you. And that cooperative aspect is very powerful. Our goal is to help them make informed decisions. Because the more they understand, they can take better steps. And that's our side. They have no idea all the phone calls and all the communication that goes on behind the scenes. They just know that when we're in front of them, they have our full attention and we're engaged.
Some of the stuff took years to set up, didn't it?
Years to create that social capital is what it is. Trust, it's consistency, it's professionalism, it's learning. And many times we don't have all the answers. Our patients have been our teachers. Yes, we've been academically, we're credentialed. However, some of the aspects of what we've encountered with the people we help, we didn't have the answer. But we've created a beautiful network of experts that help us locally, regionally, federally. We tap and create and cultivate a very powerful network where they listen to us.
There's something amazingly caring in that message, because, you know, somebody who's walking in the door has, their trust has been violated in the worst possible ways. They, you know, God, why did you do this to me? Or my body, why did you let me down, body? I've got so much more life to live. I've got, you know, I was, you know, we don't think about mortality until it slaps us in the face sometimes. And so you're walking into a person whose most important parts of their trust, system have been really badly damaged. And it sounds like you guys are really aware that trust, that building trust is going to be such an important part.
Yes, absolutely. And I remember a gentleman and his wife and two adult daughters came in. He had a gastric cancer, which is very aggressive. And he was he ruled that house with an iron fist. And the wife and daughters did not know how to help him, but he was very distressed. So the engagement process was very important. And as that trust was being engaged, it reached a point to where I asked, why do you think this happened? What do you understand about this? He started to cry because he says, I've been a bad man. And this is God's punishment to me. And his wife just was in so many tears, and his daughters just couldn't help him. And I said, that's one way to see it. But what happens if a child has cancer? What did they do? And he looked at me and he said, "Nothing, they're innocent." Exactly. We don't know. But that story, okay, if things have been done, that's one thing to address. But let's look at it this way. You have a family that loves you. They're here. They want to support. Let's focus on that. And let's look at the decisions you're making and where you're accessing your care. You have a lot of support. Let's put our attention on that to just help alleviate for that next step. But it's trust. And I personally believe we have backstage passes to someone's life in a very intimate way. And we don't abuse of that. We're very respectful. And we help to guide and sometimes are direct, but with a lot of awareness and dignity. And just to move things forward and alleviate their suffering. And that's how we get that cooperation from the family.
Beautiful. So I'm going to throw a word out there, and I'd love you to just kind of riff on this word and what it means in terms of what you're doing with people. The word is hope. How important is hope to a family, to a cancer person who's been diagnosed with cancer? How important is hope to good outcomes? And we're hearing what you do to instill hope for sure. But how do you guys view stuff like that? Is that critical to your recovery?
Absolutely. Hope, depending on the circumstances, can mean many things. They can hope for a cure. They can hope for that this treatment will improve, that things will go away. But hope changes. What if things get worse? What if their cancer gets worse and the staging increases?
Because that may happen. You guys can't make any promises.
No. So we start where they are and we'll look at that. However, they are the participant in their life and we are here to support. And that hope is, let's look at that. What perspective are we, what perception do we have about that? And some people, hope is to be able to get up and make it to the bathroom.
Right.
That's hope. Other people, it could be hope for life. So it starts to change depending on what's happening. It's about experiencing their personal quality of life. That's tied into hope. And then it can be hopeful about many things, but learning how to generate that within themselves through their faith, if they have that, or the love of their family, or their pet, or the people and circle of support that they have around them. But there's different ways to cultivate hope. And our role is to find out what makes sense that would be hopeful and not insulting. It's really sensitive because some people is like, I don't want to hear that. That doesn't work for me. Okay. Well, we won't go there. What helps you feel better? What is, going outside? Some people say, I like watering my plants. Beautiful. What happens when you do that? What experience do you have? Well, it just feels good. My plants are growing. So for us, it's about cultivating experiences that work and hope is a many things, and we try to identify what works for them.
Lovely. Helen, let's stop. We're almost at the end of our time. Let's talk about contact information. If people heard the show today, if they're interested in learning more, if they want to volunteer, or if you're just sitting on a big old bankroll of money, this is a nonprofit, like literally nonprofit. You know, they're not blessed with huge contracts, or they're not blessed with a capability of billing and getting paid for it. All the stuff that they're doing is basically, you know, with our community support. Where can we reach you?
So our phone number for the Cancer Resource Center of the Desert is 760-353-6571. We are located at 444 South 8th Street, Suite B3. In El Centro, and our office hours are 8:30 to 5 Monday through Thursday. And like I said, you can reach us and we'll schedule an appointment with you and assist you as quickly as we can.
Love that. Do you guys have any social media presence?
Yes, we do. We do have a Facebook, and that is, you can find us on Facebook, and I don't have it in front of me. I'm so sorry.
I'm betting if I write Cancer Resource Center of the Desert into my Facebook search that I'm going to find you.
I certainly hope so because I don't have it in front of me. I just have it on my phone and click.
Yeah, one of the advantages of being CEO is you don't have to post every day in Facebook just to kind of keep it going. So congrats on that. Helen, thank you so much for coming aboard today. We really are heartfelt because, you know, we talk about mental health crises, and cancer is really right up there in terms of being a possible provoker of a mental health crisis. And but how, not all the effect, just the person who's diagnosed, but their friends and their family members and their associates and their coworker, everybody. The work that you do lightens the burden on all of us. And we appreciate you having found your spot, and keep that spot warm, and stay busy in this. And we sure appreciate you coming aboard today, and wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Sis, let's talk about it. We are sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. Join us this week. Join us every week for your hour of respite, for your hour of information, and then spread the word, because that's really what our listeners do for us. Thank you so much for coming aboard. This is your host, Scott. We'll see you again next week. Take care.